All right, so we're just about done with chapter 7, getting ready to go into chapter 8. Chapter 7 is dealing with whether or not Paul's encouragement is that you stay in whatever situation you're in, that you continue to stay in that situation, knowing that God's plan is for you to follow his will. And if you're married, to stay married. If you're single, to stay single. Although, if you need to marry, it's okay. And that's kind of the end of the last couple of verses. We're talking about marriage and remarriage in chapter 7, verses 39 and 40. We'll finish that today, where it says a wife is bound as long as her husband lives. But if her husband is dead, in other words, she's a widow, she's free to marry to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. So in the Lord means to have someone who is also a believer that you're bonding with. But in my opinion, she is happier if she remains as she is. And I think that I also have the Spirit of the Lord. In other words, he's saying, when he says, I think I have the Spirit of the Lord, I believe that I'm speaking through the power of the Spirit. The fact that it's included in Scripture probably pretty much ought to make us understand that it was, yes, he did. He was speaking in the Spirit. Couple of thoughts about this. We're told in Deuteronomy and Judges and Ezra specifically not to intermarry with people who are non-believers because of the potential problem of being led away from the Lord. Deuteronomy 7:3 says, do not intermarry with them, meaning the Canaanites. Do not give your daughters to their sons, nor take their daughters for your sons. Judges 3, verse 6 says, they took their daughters in marriage, and they gave their daughters to their sons and served other gods. This is the result of when you are bound to someone else who's not in, it's hard enough being married. I think most of us can attest to this. It's hard enough being married to someone who has similar faith to us, but it certainly perhaps has not been raised like us. And even that's a struggle. Can you imagine what happens when you come from two different religions or even two different denominations? It's tough sometimes. My wife and I were part of the same, our two churches were part of the same organization, same association. And yet even our churches were very different in the way that we approach things. Hers was much more open to change, and mine was very much stuck in tradition. And if it hadn't been written in the 1950s or in the 1950s style, it wasn't considered appropriate when it came to music. Messiah was considered the highest form of music, and anything else other than that paled in comparison. All right, I'm sorry?
Those Old Testament statements about not marrying outside your faith. I mean, I remember in high school, I was dating a girl that was Jewish, and her family was Jewish, and I never picked her up at her house. Yeah. Ever. And I really wanted to take her to prom, but there was no way that was going to happen.
Yeah.
Because the family, she had to marry a Jewish boy.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a gal that, that I knew that was, her dad and my dad were in the same business. They were, in an association, a small unique association that we had over a dozen, maybe 18 different companies. I remember Sarah and I used to get together every summer for a weekend, long weekend. And we hit it off really well, but boy, we could, she was, her parents were Jewish, and there was no way that she was going to date me, and ended up marrying a nice Jewish doctor. So her parents were very happy. Widows, divorcees, unlike virgins whose parents are arranging their marriage, at least in first century time, they had a great deal to say about who they would marry and when they would marry after having already been married. So that's one of the reasons it's there. One of the reasons, it is God's will that marriage union is permanent and a lifetime commitment. Obviously, there are escape clauses. We all know them. We've all talked about them. Some of us have made use of them. The problem is that so often today we think of marriage as, you know, the first marriage is a trial marriage. We're trying to get it right, you know. And then the second one, we have an escape clause if we need to. And, you know, my wife and I, we made a decision, and there were times when it was tough. There were times when I'm pretty sure we loved each other. I'm not sure we liked each other at times. We made a decision right before we married that divorce for us was not going to be an option, which meant that I needed to live up to my vows and she needed to live up to hers. And that's tough to do sometimes. And sometimes things happen, obviously. But, you need to build your marriage on something other than just good looks, money, romantic excitement, social acceptance, raging hormones. You've got to build it on commitment, character, maturity, Christian willingness to live life according to God's will, and a willingness to grow and to learn from each other and forgive each other, and then also to minister to each other, which is, I gotta admit, sometimes I do a very lousy job of being able to minister to my wife. I think sometimes it's easier for us to minister to people that aren't close to us. Oh, well, anyhow. We need to always make sure we're marrying God's will. A couple of thoughts as we get to the end of this. Warren Wisby had a 5 questions that I thought were pretty important. And I realize most of you are married or have been married and maybe are not looking at getting married again, but you might want to pass this on to friends, family, children, grandchildren, whatever the case may be. The thing is first to identify what is your gifting from God? What is it that God has given you? And because that really helps to know what your gifting is. And then what is the gifting of the person that you're looking at marrying? How is that going to tie into how you minister and what you do, what God's calling you to do as a believer? Then number 2, are you marrying a believer? It's, I know every once in a while it works out. I have a friend who she was a year older than I was in high school. I dated her younger sister for a while. It was amazing that she did missionary dating, and for her it worked out. She married a guy. She dated a guy who was an unbeliever, came to know the Lord, and has been an incredible believer for all these years. But boy, I tell you, there have been a lot of other times where that hasn't been the case. And, your sons and daughters are pulled away and you are pulled away into worshiping some other God other than God, the God of the Bible, think how tough it was for for Solomon, who had, 300 wives and 700 concubines or something like that?
Oh, 700 wives and 300 concubines.
Thank you. Okay, 700 wives. I got
a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. You want to make sure they're not all in the same building, too, because that's a whole other set of circumstances. But anyhow, I won't go too far.
You didn't sleep at all.
Yeah. And there's something about the fact that women, when they're together, they tend to, their cycles tend to coordinate.
Synchronize.
Yes, thank you. That was the word I was looking for. So anyhow, all right. So are the circumstances such that marriage is right? That's the third question. Are the circumstances such that marriage is the right thing to do? What's going on in your life? What's going on in their life? What's going on in the world? What's going on with Christianity? Is this a good time? Are we suffering persecution? Is it the right time to marry or not? In addition to that, is the right time to bring a child into the world or not? once you're married, hopefully. How is my marriage going to affect my service for Christ? Will my marriage be a blessing or a hindrance? For years, my wife and I were on the same page ministry-wise because we were both involved in music. And when God called me to be more of a teaching pastor or a senior pastor, it really rocked her world because she felt like I was abandoning her, you know, and her ability to minister. She was really tied closely to mine. So it was a tough transition for her. But think about the fact that marriage can either be a blessing to you or a hindrance to your ability to minister. Because, you know, obviously, once we get married, we've got responsibilities for family, right? And then the last one Worsby puts out is, am I prepared to enter this union for life? Am I thinking about this as a temporary thing or as a thing that's going to, you know, last? And I understand there are times when we plan for it to go forever and things change. And that's, you know, that's not in my hands, not in your hands. Obviously, sometimes that's, you know, God knows those things long before we do, obviously, since he's eternally now. And we live in a timeline. All right.
Val, do you remember, and this is a number of years ago when we were meeting on Thursdays at Panera, we had a young man. He was actually the youngest guy that's ever been in our group that was having significant issues because his wife was a non-believer.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear from him further?
One of the reasons we didn't hear from him further was because we weren't Calvinistic enough for him.
Okay.
I wasn't a five-pointer to the degree that he thought I needed to be. And that was one of the reasons why he decided to move on from our group. But yeah, that was a tough time because you remember he was having a hard time getting her to go to church, especially Kenzie. Right.
Yeah.
He'd get her to go to some other churches, but he was dead. He was set on, you know, that he wanted to go to Kensington. And I remember telling him at the time, maybe you need to consider going someplace where she's more comfortable. As long as it preaches the gospel, you need to, you know, if you're going to have your marriage succeed, you need to be an encouragement to her, not a hindrance. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I read with that. So wish I knew the answer. All right, let's move on to chapter 8, shall we?
Okay.
Chapter 8. Was that someone said something?
I did. Okay.
Okay, good. All right. Chapter 8 is going to be a very interesting chapter because we think that it's all revolving around food being offered to idols. There, the implication and the application goes much further than that. It'll take us a while to get there. So today, if we're lucky, we'll make some good progress in 8. And then hopefully next week we'll finish it up and we'll get into the application portion of this because this is really tough. But let's start off by trying to figure out what's going on. So remember, Jews especially would not eat any meat that had been offered to any other idol. It had to be kosher. It had to be done, you know, killed a particular way. All those things were really, really important, even though Peter had had the vision in Acts and had been told that it was okay, in essence, for the Jews and the Gentiles to mix together into a new relationship called the church, and would seem to have indicated that it was okay to also eat of meat that would have been considered inappropriate for Jews prior to that relationship. That's still tough for many of these folks to get into. Plus, you had the issue of people who came to know the Lord and were very much entrenched in idol worship, suddenly realizing from their perspective that idols were imbued or had the power or had the possibility of the power of being demonic. And as such, then they were eating meat that was offered to demons. And that just they just couldn't handle that. Most of us have probably had the experience of knowing someone who was deeply entrenched in something or other in their lives prior to coming to the Lord. And then what happens is once they come to know the Lord and they realize that whatever they're entrenched in is wrong, that they go 180 degrees away from it. And anything that revolves around that is just forbidden in their minds and their conscience. And that's a tough situation, and it's one that we have to take concerns about. So here's the issue with this about pagan festivals at this time. A lot of people who were poor couldn't afford meat hardly at all. Often the only times they got meat was when there was a pagan festival. Now remember that you brought meat to the temple, whatever temple you were coming to, and offering it there. And often those people, you know, the people that worked at, even at the temple, there was way more meat than what they could handle, way more meat than they could eat at one time. And so often you would sell the meat at a discount, or you would have these big, huge feasts and you get rid of a bunch of, and you'd have a big ritual festival and you'd invite everybody to come. So meat offered to idols often, you know, before being served the temple's dining halls, often a part of the worship, if you will, was often a communal meal. And some of the meat served in the marketplace also had been offered to idols, and that was offered at a reduced rate. Obviously, if it didn't cost you anything, you can make profit on it, regardless of whether you sell it for, you know, for whatever the going rate is, or if you sell it at a sale, everything you bring in is pure profit. So the issue is the one who ate at the temple would know where the source of meat was from. And the one who ate at a pagan's friend's house could never tell for certain. Was it something that had been offered to idols, or was it, you know, free range, if you will, you know, not brought into the temple? And whether it was, you know, in pagan cities with large Jewish populations, the Jews often had their own markets. They had their own place where they would go to buy. In fact, when we were in India, there was a portion of the market that was set aside for Muslims, and the rest of the market was for the Hindus. Well, you can imagine what was going on in the marketplace for the Muslims. That's where the meat was, and that's where the butcher was. If you were a Palestinian Jewish teacher, a rabbi, you debated on what to do in many cases of uncertainty, such as untithed food. Could you eat food that had not been offered to Jehovah? Would never have taken a chance on food that might have been offered to an idol. No, you're not going to do that at all. In fact, they believed that Jews that lived outside of Palestine were unwittingly compromised with idolatry when they were invited to pagan banquets for their sons, or even if they brought their own food. As far as the Palestinian Jews were concerned, Jews of the diaspora who would go to those places were in sin. So the teaching of how you could have a relationship with a pagan was really tough. Anybody watching The Chosen? Did you watch the episode the last 2 weeks where Peter is working with a Roman soldier to rebuild a cistern? And at one point they're telling him, you know, the Roman offers him a drink, and he says, you know, Peter kind of revolts, you know, rebels from it. And that's right. You can't take anything from me. And then later they're busy doing work this past week. And they got done. They did something that was really, they were really happy with. Things were going well. And they started slapping each other and giving each other high fives and that kind of stuff, you know, and patting each other on the back. And then they realized all of a sudden that, you know, Peter is going, oh, no, I touched a Gentile. You know, I'm unclean, you know. And it was hilarious, at least for me. It was at least amusing. That's the struggle that they're going through, you know, Jews. And then on top of it, when you start bringing in Christians, you know, Gentiles that now are believers like you, but you know, they don't eat like you, their customs aren't like you. It's really uncomfortable. What do? You know, when I'm in India, I eat like an Indian. I don't always like it, but I eat it. You know, I have friends that I had some friends that would come when we would go to India. They would bring jars and jars of peanut butter. Yeah, they would eat peanut butter most of the week they were there because they couldn't stand the Indian food. I'm going, well, I got to have something. And I would eat. I'd always have whatever they offered. I might not eat a lot of it, but I'd eat it. And then I would have some beef jerky or some protein bars or something other in my room that I would occasionally snack on. But I always ate their food. Why? Because I didn't want to offend them. I can remember when Jaya, who's one of the leaders there in that church, he's actually the leader. I can remember him coming, and I can remember eating with him here in America. And the food was never hot enough as far as he was concerned. It was always incredibly bland and very mild. Yeah. You know, we enjoyed it. And he's going, oh, man, I can't. It'd be like me trying to eat something without salt on it. I just, you know, I can't stand it. All right. You know, my one comment is always, you know, when it comes to my blood pressure, just a little more salt and my blood pressure will be up where it needs to be. It's just, you know, that's what I tell my doctor. Anyhow, let's take a read here. These last few minutes, let's just take a read this chapter, and then we'll deal with it next week. Now, this is in chapter 8, verse 1 through 13. Now, about food sacrificed to idols. In other words, there's a whole other situation. Here's another question that the Corinthian people sent to Paul. Hey, could you clarify this for us? So here's his clarification. We know that we all possess knowledge. Remember, this goes all the way back to chapter 1 about the fact that the Corinthians were very proud of the knowledge they had. But he goes on to say, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. In other words, knowledge causes me to brag and be proud. But love means that I will do what's necessary to help a loved one, someone in the family. The man who thinks he knows something does not yet know as he ought to know. In other words, he's not fully knowledgeable. But the man who loves God is known by God. So then, about eating food sacrificed to idols. We know that an idol is nothing at all in the world, and that there is no God but one. In other words, he's talking about the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one. Right? Mm-hmm. All right, so he goes on to say, but for even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, indeed, there are many gods and many lords. Yet for us, there is but one God, one Father, from whom all things come and from whom we live. And there is but one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom all things came and through whom we live. But not everyone knows this. Some people are still so accustomed to idols that when they eat such food, they think of it as having been sacrificed to an idol. And since their conscience is weak, it is defiled. But food does not bring us near to God. We are no worse if we do not eat, and no better if we do. It's an interesting argument he's making. It's a strong argument, I think. And he goes on to say in verse 9, be careful, however, that in the exercise of your freedom does not become a stumbling block to the weak. We're going to talk about that. That's really important. It's going to be easy for us to get off on a tangent on that. For if anyone with a weak conscience sees you who have this knowledge eating in an idol's temple, won't he be emboldened to eat what has been sacrificed to idols? So this weak brother for whom Christ died is destroyed by your knowledge. When you sin against your brothers in this way and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. This is really important. The issue is, if you have weaker brothers and sisters, when you do something that not necessarily offends them but destroys them in their understanding of who Christ is and how they're supposed to live their life, you're actually causing harm to them and you're causing harm to Christ. Therefore, if what I eat causes my brother to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause him to fall. That's what we're dealing with. So then the question is, does that mean that we have to give up all that good food? And we'll talk about that next week.
sounds very situational.
Yes. And what you're going to find is that circumstance, it's going to have to be by case-by-case basis, ultimately, is what's going to happen.
But I love his rationalization. I mean, he makes this meat offered to idols a completely false proposition, because these idols are non-entities. These gods don't exist. There is only one God. So you really have nothing to fear.
Yep.
And even today, there are individuals that take things like that to heart, in that there were people that I've known that if there was somebody, if they were invited to a party or whatever, someone who had a problem with alcohol, they would never even, they'd never have alcohol around, because they didn't want to be in a position of possibly tempting someone and have them go back over the edge if they had sworn off alcohol or anything like that. And often people don't think of things like that, because we're given a party, we're thinking more in terms of how we like to enjoy things, and that, you know, unfortunately for some people, they can't enjoy things without alcohol.
Yeah.
So, but they put other people at risk of
potentially. Yeah. Yeah. So you need to be concerned. Yeah. Obviously, the issue is being concerned about others and what are their struggles. We had an in-law who they were like a roller coaster when it came to their what they agreed, what they thought they should do as Christians, and what they didn't think they should do as Christians. I can remember one for years they were against going to movies, which was fine because I had been raised that way. It wasn't a big issue for me. And then they decided, oh, movies was fine, but television was wrong. So, you know, it's like, well, you couldn't watch anything on television. That lasted until the football season for their husband. Just saying. Suddenly he decided that watching TV was okay. Up to that point in time, he was against it. But situational ethics, you know. So anyhow, yeah. We're going to get into that. It's going to be an interesting discussion, especially as we start to figure out how that applies in other areas, not just about meat or alcohol, but what about other associations that we might have. Is it appropriate or inappropriate for us to do things like, oh, I don't know, be a Freemason, you know, as an example. We'll at least touch on that as we get into this. And things like that. I can remember one church that would, they about came unglued, that they, I had something on my website that they thought that I was into astrology. I'm going, no, it's just the way it was Facebook. I don't remember what it was, but it was like, no, I'm not into astrology. I never pay any attention to that. I don't really care about it one way or another. And then they saw my class ring that I'd gotten from my doctorate. And so then they were accusing me of being a Mason. What? I was candidating at this church, you know, or a potential candidate. I can remember I was in a Q&A time. I took my ring off and I tossed it to the guy that was accusing me of it. I said, what do you think that is? Take a look. He caught it. He looked at it. Oh, that's a class ring. Yeah, it's a class ring. And they were a stitch. My wife still thinks I should have gone to that church. I got all done and I left, and I was done with that church as far as I was concerned. I was not, I had two churches that I was candidating at the same time, which was really weird. Doesn't usually happen that way. It just kind of did. And I drove away from there saying, I'm done with this place. And I got a call. I must have been maybe 10 miles down the road. I got a call from the chairman of the search committee. We voted unanimously. We want you to come and officially candidate. Yeah, no thanks. I was so PO'd with them. They would just nitpick on everything. And I thought, ugh, I don't think I can handle it. Then I went to a church that ended up being probably worse. Oh, well. Life is interesting at times, isn't it? God brings unique things into our way. I just can remember taking that ring off and flipping it to that guy, tossing it to him and saying, what do you think that is? You know, oh, you must be wearing a mason ring. No, you have no idea what a mason ring looks like if you think that my signet ring is a mason ring. But okay, go for it. Oh, well. Listen, guys, it's been good. We'll talk Thursday, and then we'll get into more of this on next week. So,
good. See you then.
Take care. God bless.
Adios.
Ciao, gentlemen.
Have a good week, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
See you Thursday.
Later.
God bless.
And Roger, I'll send you that info later.
Yeah,
today.
Man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem.
Have a good one. Hope your fingers are feeling better. I haven't heard.
Yeah, it's getting another 10 days and I'll have it off.
Well, cool.
So hopefully.
And your wife's knee? I'm not buggy, but.
Yeah, she seems to be. Well, she's still struggling. They still hurt, but, you know, she's learned that Motrin is apparently bad for you.
Ah.
I've lived on Motrin for years over the. I don't live on it every day, but yeah. I'm a strong believer in Motrin. And she uses it to started recently using it because it really helps her joints. And then she was reading something that her daughter sent to her. And said, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing it. I said, yeah, you know what?
Got a buildup effect.
Yeah, I don't really care. Just, you know, if it makes you feel better, as far as
I know. Good. Hey, Giuseppe.
Yeah.
God bless you. I was praying about you yesterday.
Oh, thank you. I haven't received.
I don't know how you're doing, but
right. I overslept again. So
yeah, I noticed that, man. You know, we gotta have to send you back to Sicily so you can be on time.
Roger, I haven't received your email address for.
Let me send it to you right now.
Okay, this way I can.
Thank you, sir. Good reminder.
I can give you. I can. Wow. You can receive the newsletter.
Yes,
all
please.
Right. Thanks.
Yes, sir. Go with God.
You too.
Voy a Dios.
Vaya con Dios.
Hey, gee, you doing okay? You back here in Michigan?
Oh, yeah, I am here. Yeah. Been here for a week. We had the Christmas with the kids, minus one grandchild from Josh and his wife because he was having fever, strep throat, all that kind of stuff. So today I'm meeting with Mission 25.
What's Mission 25?
They work in Cambodia.
What?
In
Cambodia?
And rescuing women, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
So their friends, the husband is a personal friend of Benjamin, and they wanted to know more about that now and possibility for Europe or Italy.
Okay.
So we have lunch and me, Penny, and them over, I don't know who else, over 24 and De Quinder and Van Dyke, Italian restaurant.
24 and Van Dyke.
Da Francesco.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they might live around that part. They used to go to Community Christian Church on Ryan Road.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
Been dealing with the internet, the phones, changed phones, and they didn't port everything. So I have a phone number missing, emails missing. So.
Why'd you change? Did you get a cheaper price?
No, newer phones.
Oh, okay. You just changed phones so that everything didn't download to them?
Yeah. So, thank goodness I have a secondary phone where I should have everything. So, let's see what happened.
Get yourself a computer and you get all your emails on that, too.
Yeah. I don't have a computer. We have just iPads.
Yeah, well, put that in your wish list from your...
For next year, we'll see. I didn't see Dennis.
I didn't either. I don't know how he's doing.
Oh, I talked yesterday briefly with Edwin. So,
how's Edwin doing?
Sounds okay, but he's waiting for a result too, I guess. So.
Okay, all right.
Tonight I took my neighbor to supper. We talked about a little bit. He has final stage pancreatic cancer.
Oh, boy.
So he's going today to the doctor to let me know what's going on, what else is going on. Our neighbor still has cancer, the lady.
Yeah.
She's been going on now for, 2 years at least.
Wow.
So, yeah. I saw Brother Sal Aragona.
Oh, yeah.
Sunday afternoon in Rochester with a couple of brothers at a cigar bar.
So were you enjoying a cigar?
Oh no, I don't smoke anything.
Well, here's Danny. Let's see what he has to say. He sent me a text. He says, sorry I missed today. I changed my WoW package yesterday, dropped the cable service, and woke up this morning without internet. Spent an hour or so on the phone getting my internet back. See you Thursday, hopeful.
Yeah, well, that's the way thing yesterday were too. I changed the internet to save money. Then I had to return back to Xfinity for less money. They gave me the promotion, whatever. So I have back the internet. Anyway. That's life, I guess. Oh, try to save money and end up with something that doesn't work.
Well, I'm thinking about increasing my paying a little more, but I've got a special that I can get about four times the internet speed of what I've got right now for about $10 more a month. And there are times my internet is really stinking slow.
Right.
So it all revolves around the fact I have a business line. So I have to have business internet. It's crazy.
Yeah. How's church going?
Going well, everything considered. You know, we're not really growing numerically. I think we're growing spiritually. They seem to be responding well. I got a meeting tonight with the leadership. And, you know, we asked for a huge increase in our offerings. And September, October, November, December. We're halfway through January. So we're roughly 4.5 months into it, and we're in pretty decent shape. We're offering wise, we're I think we're like behind about a week's worth of giving. That's not bad,
right?
As far as our budget, and then our money for the
parking lot.
We are we're about halfway there in our pledges.
Yeah.
And then we had in addition to that, we had another $5,000 promised or given that was not pledged. And right. Then we rent the building. We've added those funds towards either the parking lot or building expenses, you know, extra things. So at the moment, I want to encourage our folks to finish giving out the rest of this year, but we're close to what we need for the parking lot, you know. So I'm thinking about saying, hey, let's you know, let's start the parking lot in the spring if we have the money, because the rentals, we had 5,000 plus we had another what do we have?
Rental, so what?
Well, we rent the building. We have a ministry that rents it. We have a folk dance team that rents it. You know, we have a gym. You know, so the right. team dances in the gym. It's a polka. It's a
right.
Polish dance.
Sure,
dance
sure. Team.
And then we have we've rented it out to cheerleaders when they're getting ready for
cheer
competitions, that kind of thing. So and then we've got a group that's kind of like they're called One Day at a Time. It's kind of like Alcoholics Anonymous,
mm-hmm.
same kind of thing. So all of these folks, you know, pay a little bit of money. And so we have about $6,000 that they've given this, you know, in rental income.
Mm-hmm.
So all together, we're about about $5,000, I guess, because we're about 17. We have 12,000 already given for the parking lot, and we have 5,000 in rental. So that gives us about $17,000.
Right.
So it's a, you know, we still need to get the rest of our income in for the parking lot.
Right. But
then if that happens, then we can take some of that money and do some fixing around the building.
Right.
But, you know, it's like we found yesterday, and again, it's a small thing, but I'm working with my admin, and I said, she said, did we ever find out what about this one particular charge? I said, I have no idea, but let me, I know what it is. It's a, it's a distribution program for music. You know, you can listen or speaking, spoken word, whatever. It's an audio, it's called SoundCloud. And we pay $130 a year for it. Well, it's not a lot of money, but we're on a shoestring budget. So
right.
I went out and finally figured out who knew what it was. And I go, oh, yeah, we haven't used that since we started using YouTube.
Yeah.
We need to stop paying for it. So it's coming due in March. Yeah, it's done.
Right.
You know, save us $130. You know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, when we don't have a lot of money to begin with, it's that's about 1% of our budget.
Yeah. Dire times, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we're making, everything's fine. Everything's, you know, we're doing okay. It's not like we're hurting, but, and we've got a little, you know, we've got some income. I mean, we've got some, hit some money in the bank, and we just put, we had a kind of a rainy day fund that we put into a CD because we kept losing money in the stock market. So we pulled it out. We'll get 4% on that. Just better than not. But, you know, right. then just minutia stuff, you know, working with the website, trying to get that up to date. And I got it kind of up to date. It went into an issue and took me half a day yesterday to figure out what I had to do. It's just, I keep telling them, I'm not a web guy. That's not my calling. It's not my ability. I only do this because I can't get anybody else to do it. Anybody that can do webs. Stuff and is willing to
did
do it.
Did you try Detroit Internet Marketing?
No, I didn't. No, because I don't want to spend any money.
Oh, I understand. I don't know.
So what they I've got say. A. I've got a. It's about the last thing I want to do is I need to upgrade the software before I do that, I need to back up the website, and that's yeah. the issue is. Can I back it up? And how do I back it up? So that was what I had to figure out yesterday. So anyhow, I figured it out. I haven't done it yet, but I figured it out. So praise the Lord. We're on the right. But man, oh man. sometimes, like, you know, I just need to be able to concentrate on
one thing,
which would be like, you know, preparing for Sunday and or for, you know, our time together here. But anyhow, it's happening. It's just
One of my guys is having trouble at home, Girolamo. Probably with his wife.
Sorry to hear that. What's going on with that?
Well, because she's not a believer. Simple. That's it. So she's against what they did in the past, or how the wave responds to her, stuff like that. You know, he's blind. He needs somebody to take care of it, of him mostly.
So. Well, that's not the guy that we met.
No, he's north, in the north part.
Okay, all right.
He sold the house in Sicily. He co-owns the house with his son-in-law, his daughter, the kids, and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
They just finished putting the drive it on the outside of the house. It's the styrofoam.
It's the last thing you do to finish the house. Now they're going to have to pay taxes on it.
No, that they did it for the heat. They put the 4 inches of that thing or more.
Oh wow!
In the entire house, all outside. Then they have to remove the doors and windows and move it forward out. You know.
Oh yeah, because of the 4 inches. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
We did drive it on one of our one church. We added on a gymnatorium. And it was a metal building, but we used brick, a third of the way up on the outside, and then drive it the rest of the way.
Yeah. So this way they can have, well, plus all the pipes need to be changed, a new bathroom, a lot of money.
That way.
It lasted at least, a year to work.
Oh, wow.
Well, because there was the COVID and so on and so forth, but they're out of there. And so then there's other issues with him up there, family squabbles, you know. So when you move in with another unit in the same place, mm-hmm. it doesn't take long to have a squabble.
Yeah, I remember I had one guy at one of my churches years ago. I don't know why he did this, but he decided that his wife had been married before. I think it was his first marriage. She had grown kids, and so her youngest and her husband and their kids, they had three. All these two families, three generations in one house, moved into a house. And he said...
You're still recording?
Oh, yeah, sure. Whatever. I'll stop.